Good morning to you. I'm Randy Anderson, and welcome to Classical Spotlight. And we have one guest today. That's Barry Brake. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Randy. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and you were doing great last night.
Thank you.
Because the station, thanks to Nathan Cohn and his movie series, put on a film I had never seen before by a director I very much admire, Murnau, entitled Sunrise. And he made the jump from German cinema to the United States and made this film. And like most movies made in 1927, it was silent. And so how does Nathan ask you to compose a score for something like that?
Actually, the whole thing started last year when they did Wings, which is also a 1927 movie. And he said, would you be interested in playing the music for it? And I said, well, sure, that'd be a blast. And it turned out real well, I think. And so they said, well, hey, you want to rev up again for this year? We're doing a Murnau film. And I thought, well, this is great. You know, it's really cool to be able to write a score essentially working with a great director and someone who really has put together a blockbuster movie that's already won an Academy Award. And you know,
that's right. Yeah, the hard work on their part is done, and it's a big budget film in both cases.
Exactly.
And there's their score. Now, watching silent films on television and buying the videos and such, every now and again you get a really cheap one that has absolute silence. You just hear a 60 hertz tone, and you have to turn down your TV sound to watch it. But in some cases, they actually hire someone to play the music. And I don't know how accurate it is, but when you hear some of the music that was purportedly played during those days, you hear Edward McDowell, To a Wild Rose,
sure.
Edvard Grieg, Eris's Death, Chopin's E Minor Prelude, number 4.
Lots of Massenet.
Right. And so you wonder, is that the way it was back then, or did the keyboardists, because they had organs and pianos and orchestras, all doing this, I wonder if they really just had some stock pieces?
They often did, Randy. They would have just stacks and stacks of stuff, and they would say, okay, we need 20 seconds worth of romantic stuff. And so they'd get out some little passage from Wagner or something, you know,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know, not too familiar, but has that familiarity to it. And then, of course, as you mentioned, lots of real popular stuff and kind of folk. And that was accepted as what happened in movies. And if you want to get a feel for what people's taste was, think of yourself watching those Warner Brothers things as a kid, and when someone dies, you hear, you know, or something, or, you know, you'll hear little popular tunes woven in, and you don't think anything about it. And that's exactly what was happening in those days. If you watch, for instance, Gone with the Wind, even as late as the late 30s, you'll hear the little national anthem being stuck in there. And
that's right.
Stuff that we would never accept. We would think, oh, that's way too cheesy. That's not original film score. But that they did it all the time.
Now, looking at you at the piano, you have 3 sheets of paper, and
yes,
there's not one musical note on it.
I already had kind of picked out what my musical stuff would be, and sort of formed several major themes, the love theme, the sort of kind of redemption theme. Anyway, and then the rest of it is just nothing but pages and pages of very detailed timing notes and what's going to happen and all that sort of stuff. So I'll say 106:40, there's a pause where the director stops here, and then you resume, and they're dancing, and then then 15 seconds later the strap falls off of the girl's dress,
right.
You know, that sort of thing. And so I just have, you know, make note of that, so anytime I need to punch something, I can punch it, and I sort of know in a minute and a half I'm going to need to be in B minor, that sort of thing. And as you also can see, there's 3 pages, and on the first page here, it starts with 29 minutes and 24 seconds. I lost the first sheet.
Oh.
I could not find it anywhere. It's not in my house. It's not in my car. So who knows where it is. It got shuffled into the trash or something.
Well,
so we did it from memory, the first part. My fiance said, I bet I can tell right about when you started being able to time it, right? It was right about when they were on the water and so was happening. She was about a minute off, but she heard when it kind of got fuller and
gelled
a little more precise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now
it worked out okay, though.
How many times did you have to watch the film?
Well, that depends on what you want to say about it. I like things to be fresh, and I think any film score composer will tell you this. You don't want to watch the film too much as you're doing the music, because you want to still feel surprised by the surprising parts, and you want to feel tearful at the tearful parts and all of that. So what I did was I actually watched it only once. But then again, within that, I would say I've actually seen the entire movie scene by scene, if you want to look at it that way, probably four or five times. The spotting session is what they call it. And the spotting session took me, I don't know, around 4.5 or 5 hours.
Right.
So each little scene, I kind of scrub back and say, okay, that happens at 31:12. And, okay, here's what, oh, I see, that look on her face is referring to the, you know. And so that's how it was done.
Wow. Well, it was amazing. And the movie itself, besides being a great film and receiving 4 or 5 stars, depending on which book you look at, it's beautifully made. We had a good print. And what was amazing about the music was that, and I guess this is that peril thing, you know, we know the film could break, but we know that the actors aren't going to forget their lines because they managed to nail it down solid back in 1927. But the fact that you were back there making it live gave it the feeling of a live performance added an extra energy. Quality that you don't have with normal movies.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And just think, that's how it was. You would go to the movies in the 1920s and you had a live performer sitting there playing the music for you, or maybe even several live performers or an orchestra or whatever, sitting there right in front of you. It was more like a staged event in some cases.
Well, there's a lot of stuff I'd like to touch on that was in the movie, but let's give the people some music. So what would you like to start off with?
Well, why don't we start off with the opening credits? What we want to do is sort of set the tone for what the movie's going to be like, and that includes setting the harmonic tone as well. We want it so that you're comfortable with the musical language that's going on. In this case, it's very frankly modern, but not in the dissonant or alienating way. The harmonic language, for you music buffs out there, is called pandiatonicism, which means that you're using traditional scales, but you're sort of distributing them in a modern way. And that's a real nice way to achieve something that sounds fresh and not corny, while at the same time being very, very easy on the ear. We're diatonic people. And so, anyway, here's the opening credits to Sunrise by F.W. Murnau.
Thank you.
to let people know if they didn't were not at the performance last night in the film. It's kind of hard to separate the two. It starts off with a husband and wife and a child, and of course they have the flapper who's in the country and visiting, and of course she's carrying on this torrid affair with the husband, and we're getting to a point where she's going to want him full-time, even back in the city.
Right.
And there's a little fantasy scene, and this just cracked me up, because
right.
the guy who's, you know, he's a country, honest country fellow, hearty.
Hardworking.
That's right. And
plain.
I didn't say bumpkin, but, you know, he's unfamiliar with the city.
Yeah.
So when he has a fantasy about what the city, and they never tell us which one it is about, they have the wildest scenes. I mean, it's kind of like a Metropolis in a way, and what you've got is a synchronized tuba band jumping up and down and moving and
jumping
twisting.
Up and down. And it's actually a loop. It's about a 3 or 4 measure loop that's being used, and it kind of like goes back. It's like scrubbed back and forth.
Ah.
And so it gives it this sort of almost nightmarish quality. You know, he Murnau, I think, if I can read into it, wants to make the city look like a very enticing, appealing place, but also evil or in some way not good or wholesome or healthy, because after all, this is the affair. This guy's going to leave his wife and
that's right.
do something wrong here. So
well, and the music you chose for that was just wonderful, because the image, I mean, you're really right. It's nightmare fuel. The idea of seeing a synchronized sousaphone band jumping up and down and twisting and playing.
With a montage of city lights and buildings and cars rushing by and all of that, too.
And give me trees any day. But what kind of music did you kind of put to this? What were you thinking that would give you this edge?
Okay, well, what I did was I used... The dissonance of jazz to create this real sort of expressionist, disturbing-sounding, jazzy thing. I wanted a nightmare of the city, really.
Well, and it worked. that was...
yeah, it was. You want to hear a little
bit
of it?
Oh, you bet.
Okay, we'll hear a little bit of it. Let's see if I can get into it here.
Well, that was a Hieronymus Bosch jazz club.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you did a great job, because it was just so manic and just, but she really, because she's putting it on heavy because she wants him to leave his wife.
Right.
And of course, the clincher is, he says, and what about my wife? I mean, he's really so naive. And she says, oh no, you will have to kill her. And here we are with one of the big thrusts of the movie, and you really underline that beautifully. Now, to carry us out, the husband and wife, she realizes that he's going to harm her, and she freaks out, and then he can't do it.
Right.
And they get to the big city. She's running away. She's hiding from him. And then they sort of rediscover their love for each other. And there's some really beautiful and kind of poignant scenes, and even a drunk pig. They work, you know, you can't always work in an inebriated swine.
You
but
have
they
to
did
see
it.
The movie to understand it, really, really.
But
it comes to the point of humor. They're able to enjoy each other's company and have crazy adventures at the fair and all sorts of stuff, because she has found it in her heart to forgive him.
And one of the things that really impressed me was that one of the climactic moments came when they were at a church, and they're witnessing another person's wedding, and the husband suddenly realizes what he's, you know, besides murder, which, you know, is always a bad start of a day, but he's realizing that he's throwing away this life that he promised in front of God and everyone to take care of this woman, and here he's been so selfish. And when the bells start ringing, you work that into the music in a wonderful kind of rocking quality that didn't necessarily mimic bells in a traditional kind of obvious way, but in a very subtle way, and it really added to the quality of the film.
Right. That was my little forgiveness motif. and it's this wonderful kind of expansive, it's not yippee-yay cheery, you know, but it's just this kind of, there's a light that appears.
Did you change it harmonically?
Yeah, absolutely.
When
absolutely.
The forgiveness comes?
Absolutely. It's, if you'd like, I'll take you through it.
Sure.
What happens is we're in the church, and for the church I use this real kind of thing going on, and so it sounds kind of churchy, mm-hmm. and also it's a sad moment of realization for the guy, you know, and a little bit of edging toward resolution for him. And as he then begins to realize, he hears the vows, will you vow to love her, protect her? Of course, Murnau does not leave anything to the imagination, because the title cards, the scripts that you're reading, are in huge letters all the way across the screen. They get bigger for that part.
That's,
you know?
Right.
And so that's when the guy really breaks down. She then, at that point, kind of finds him in her heart to forgive him. And so that's when we get into the sort of what you were talking about, the sort of, you know, rollicking. It's just in this 3-4 kind of, that kind of stuff. You see the church bells ringing. The two of them come out of the church, and people think that it's a bride and groom. And so it's this wonderful kind of thing where they're kind of embarking on a new phase here.
That's right.
You've heard kind of a little bit of that motif. Why don't we end with the end of the movie?
Okay.
There has been much danger, and we think she might be dead. They're coming back on the boat, and there's a storm.
The
we
great
think
irony,
she's drowned.
The boat does sink in a storm. It's
yeah.
not a pretend accident, so he can get the vamp. He yeah. survives, but he doesn't know where she is.
Right. So then at the very end of the movie, we're in this horrible scene where he thinks she's dead, and the sort of maid comes out and calls to him, they found her, and they do find her. He goes and falls into her arms, and by that point her hair is down, you know, and she's in the bed and her eyes awake, and we get this wonderful little montage again to close the movie. The sun begins to rise, the church bells ring, it's sunrise, and kind of the beginning of a new day for them. So, the end, the closing sequence of the movie Sunrise by F.W. Murnau.
And what a great film, and as I said before, the music just really added a kind of an undefinable positive quality to it, and Barry Brake made that all possible, and it reminds me of Mozart, you know, there's not a note written down, it's all in his head, and the guy says, well, it doesn't do me any good up there, I need it on paper, Well, Barry Brake, thank you so much.
Thank you, Randy.
Coming in and playing all this great music for us on Classical Spotlight.